I ain't gonna worry. I don't know, whatever Billy was singing. All right. So this is the afterburn. So if you have any comments or questions about today's teaching, you're welcome to line up over here. We've got a podium. If you're online, our Shamash team will take down your comments and questions. And I hope you're starting to see how now the armor fits into the idea of being set apart. Okay? I think that was good teaching there. All right, we'll begin with Taylor.
So could I have two questions if one's short and not this long? Okay. So you mentioned in between about Yeshua emptying himself and not thinking too much of himself. Okay, so I'm trying to see in my head how much of myself to empty when it comes to walking this out. And I was trying to see if when you said that is, I know you say that we don't have to lose who we are as a person or our character, but we still need to walk it out. But sometimes I see in my life like certain things getting in the way and I'm always like, okay, does this mean emptying myself and do I have to get rid of that? So was you saying that strictly based off of actions or character?
No, it's probably a little of both. So look, emptying yourself, the easiest way for me to give you that is certain phrases. When you say, I want, I don't want, I like, I don't like. In other words, all those preferences is where self comes in. And if those preferences are not in line with him, because there are things that you want that he wants. There's things you like that he likes. I mean, a lot of you, hopefully all of you, love Shabbat. So that lines up. And when you think, man, I want it to be Shabbat already. Well, that's nothing wrong with that. That's not self. That's him. It's you. It's perfect. But there's things that you'll be like, I want, I prefer, and he said no. Or things that he said, you got to do this. Not you should, but you, this is a requirement. And you're like, but I don't really want to do that. Okay, that's the self. The self is why you don't keep things correctly. The self isn't, or sometimes the self is why you don't keep it at all. Some of you don't tithe. If you don't tithe, it's because of self. It's the only reason you don't tithe. There's some part of self that says, I don't want to give them the money. And mostly because you're thinking it's going to me, which it is. So stop, get over it already. You understand what I mean by that. You're paying all these things to him. And so I don't know why you get that all messed up. Some of you don't keep Shabbat correctly because it's aspects of keeping Shabbat where you still want to do what you want to do, even though it's Shabbat. So you don't want to restrict yourself, that's self again, and say no to you. And this is where you have to empty yourself. Get rid of your needing it to be what you want, you prefer, your desire, and let it be his. But you're still going to do it as Taylor, okay? You're not going to do it like Shamash Waffle or Beth or the next person as they go around the room, okay? You're going to do it as you, with your flavor, but you're still going to be only doing, preferring what he prefers and doing what he said, okay? All right? So you still got to be you. We love all of the wonderful things that each of us brings. That's a little bit different for our personalities and those kind of things. But from a character and action point of view, we should all be on the same page, even though we might have slightly differences in the personality approach to it. But ultimately, we should have the same character, the character of Yeshua, and the same actions. That doesn't mean like literally every single thing. Like, for example, I may pick a Bible movie to watch on Shabbat. You may prefer a different Bible movie if you wanted to watch a movie, so we might have a difference there. You may prefer to study and read your word than watch a Bible movie. But these are all actions that are in line with him, but your personality and my personality are different enough. Now, as far as certain actions, we both show up to services. We both make sure to keep Shabbat set apart and don't work our jobs on it, right? Some people may think they could cook. Others think they shouldn't. We have to be on the same page with that. Some people think you could do this. Some people think you could do that. We have to be on the same page with that. And it has to not be our preference. It has to be what he said. And that's where we get into the emptying ourselves. It's, but I don't like that. That's already a self-thought. Oh, but I don't want to do that. Oh, but I really want to do this. And I don't, that's not fair. That's not right that I don't get. Now it's all about me. That's self. All right? Did that help?
Yes, it did. Thank you. And then... My other question, so me considering you a wealthy person, I'm trying to see, like you mentioned how we're not supposed to, like say, okay, we're not supposed to get wealth because that's like evil or whatever. In my head, I've always gone to like, oh my gosh, if I had a big house or whatever, I would like, I would just lose myself completely just in the back of my head. And I maybe think it's from Christianity thinking like, oh, I can't be wealthy because that's sinful. But I'm still wondering how you don't cross that line, or how for you personally, how you don't keep yourself, how you keep yourself from being like, oh, I'm high and mighty with all this money that I have.
Okay. Good question. All right. So it really comes down to everything in life, you should have an outcome in mind. Okay, so, and a purpose in mind. So, I mean, in other words, I don't want wealth just to have wealth. So what would I want to do with it is why I want wealth, right? And so anything, like, why do I keep Shabbat? Because of the outcome and the purpose behind it, which is I want the peace, the rest. I want the relationship with him. I want the obedience. I want, right? So there's a reason to do these things. It's not just because he said so, although that should be enough, but it's not just that. So those people that struggle with wealth, we're talking about, and wealth is a very interesting word. Wealth and riches are completely different things. You can be very wealthy with not a lot of money. Because wealth is having the financial piece. Okay, if you have enough money to pay your lifestyle and your bills without any stress, you're wealthy. All right? Now, if you want to be able to do more and you can't, that's going to take away from that piece. So then you maybe want to have more wealth. Not wealth so you can do more, but I mean more for other people, more for things that you want to do. Okay? I know, for example, that when, and I've had a very high roller coaster, okay? I've been fairly wealthy at times and very broke and bankrupt and fairly wealthy and broke. Okay, so as any entrepreneur experience would be. And I can tell you how one of the motivators for me was the misery of having more month at the end of the money. And I had a purpose to gather enough wealth that that's no longer a problem. And I know a lot of you are thinking, oh, well, that's just because we send you money. Well, look, you know what? I earned every penny I get from him. Okay? Okay, I work, and it's not for me. I work, everything I do is for other people. And every minute of the week that I'm working, it's for all of you. And yes, I get compensated reasonably for that, but I should, because this is a brutal job. And it's a 724, 365 type of deal. And so what would you think you should be paid for that? What would your dollar amount be to be available every day, all year? Probably bigger than whatever I'm getting paid. I can promise you I don't get paid enough if that was what I was looking at, but I get paid more than enough so that I can have the lifestyle of where I have enough money that I don't have stress because of money, but I also have money that I help people, which is really funny because I guess I will say it out here. I help a lot of people. I help a lot of people, not the ministry. Okay, the ministry helps a lot of people too. But there's people that I help because the ministry can't do it. And the ministry can't do it because if the ministry helps somebody with certain things, that means I have to help everybody with the same certain thing. And so I have to always be able to answer the question, if I do that for you, am I willing to do it for everybody with the same situation? And when the answer is no, I can't do it for everybody, then sometimes I do it. That's not to brag or anything, but I can do that only because of the wealth. Okay, so Taylor, does that help you understand? And so it's the lack of knowing what you intend to do with it that makes money scary or you're concerned because you haven't thought about what you would do with it. All right? But if you already have a purpose for it, this is why athletes who went from poverty to bazillionaires' lives go into the gutter because they never really thought through what to do with it. And so they just go nuts. My lifestyle, this is another thing that could maybe help you. I never changed my lifestyle. I don't eat fancier. I don't own fancier clothes. I don't drive fancy. I drive a minivan. Okay? All right? Okay? I don't have a lifestyle that's changed no matter how much I had or didn't have. Okay? And so that's also part of what keeps you out of trouble with the wealth thing, right? It's when accumulating it is the goal, and having lots of toys as symbols of your success is the goal. That's where you get in trouble, all right? And by the way, anybody who wants a big house, think about that more than once when you have to clean it and fix it and everything else, all right? All right, just. I promised my wife a big house. We have a big house. But we were both thinking that that was a weird dream or a wrong dream. Now we're thinking we need to go get a smaller house. Because it's just something that you think, and then the reality is different when you finally get there. All right? And so sometimes you have to have that experience. Okay? Look, I don't have like a 50,000 square foot mansion, you know, with 57 cars, but I got what's relatively would be considered a house that's bigger than probably I need. Okay. So it's not some huge mansion or anything. It's just a fairly decent sized house. But the thing is, it's bigger than, it's at least the size we were hoping to maybe one day have. And yet, it's actually probably bigger than we really need. And now we're realizing that you have to clean it and maintain it and everything else. You got to think these things through. You know, go look at Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett lives in the same house he's lived in pretty much his whole life. It's not the biggest house ever anywhere. Okay, he doesn't do anything ostentatious. Doesn't like have this ridiculous lifestyle. And he's got more money than almost anybody. He still eats McDonald's and drinks Coke because he owns those companies. All right? But it hasn't changed him. See, if you let the money change you, that's where the problem is. You need to be accumulating only enough wealth to do the things you want to do with it that doesn't change you. But what it can change is take away a lot of the stress. Okay? Because not being able to pay your bills is very stressful. I absolutely can understand. Okay? If you've ever had to go on a basis and look at your phone every day or multiple times a day to make sure you haven't bounced something, you're broke. Okay? You go on your online banking and just make sure that you haven't messed anything up because you're literally right about here with your finances. And sometimes you're here and sometimes you're just right there all the time. I've lived that. I know what that's like, and I'm so glad I'm not living that now. But you know what? It took me most of the last 50 years to get there. Didn't spend much of my life there, but I worked really hard to get there. And so don't be afraid of it, Taylor, okay? What did I tell you earlier is the cure for most things? Bring reality in, right? So here's the reality that you're missing. What are you going to do with it? You bring the reality of what you're planning to do with it in, then it's exciting, not scary anymore. Okay? The fear of it's going to change me. Not if you don't want it to. Not if you have no interest in it changing you. I've eaten in some fancy restaurants over the years, just like for an anniversary or something. I don't like fancy food. I just realized that if someone gave me $1 billion right now, I would not eat at those fancy restaurants. It wouldn't change where I go to eat. At all. Okay? I don't have a taste bud for that stuff. I'm not going to be wearing $1,000 suits. I'm going to dress like this. Okay? As a matter of fact, it's interesting that I wore the same exact shirt that was in the video that was on the music we played today. I had no idea that was going to happen. Okay? But did that help you? Okay? So don't be afraid of it. Look at Abraham. Look at Isaac. Look at Jacob. Look at even Yeshua. He was wealthy enough that with Judas putting his hands in the purse and stealing all the time, it still had enough to take care of everything. There was so much that he could steal and nobody would even really notice. That's a lot. Okay? That's a lot. All right, so hopefully that helped quite a bit. All right? He wants us to be abundant. He wants us to be wealthy. Wealthy means having a peace without having needs. In other words, your needs are provided for. And some of your desires too. We just have to be careful that our desires don't go into crazy land, right? Okay? All right, Shannon.
I have a question. I remember once you were talking about this, I remember we counseled about it before, I can't remember the context, but I remember you mentioning that there are times where our mind and our heart, they're not one. Like, one is leading more more than the other, and I just felt like I wanted to ask that so you can re-explain that, because I have struggles where it seems like intellectually I know I'm supposed to do Torah-wise, like, yeah, I opened my eyes believing I can do it, but it seems like the only thing I struggle with is, well, the mixed emotions and the fears I seem to still have that keep knocking on my door. It's like driving me crazy. And then I just remember what you said about how your mind or your heart can lead more than the other. I just wonder if you could explain that. So, thank you.
I'm not sure I understood that, so explaining could be tough. Okay, look, I think what you're describing is something that I've talked about before, which is the battle between the thoughts versus the emotions. Okay, you have the thought of a Torah thing to do, and then you have an emotion that's either for or against that. And what I've taught over the years about this is whichever one is stronger wins. Okay, if your mind is stronger, the thought to do, then you'll do. If the emotion is stronger, then the emotion to do will win, or not do, whichever way that's going. And so what you want to do is win that battle inside your mind and your heart to make sure that you're not emotion driving, right? There's nothing wrong with emotion. Just don't let the emotion drive. Let the intellect drive with the emotion riding in the back seat, so that you're having whatever emotion that you should have while doing what the mind wants to do. Okay? And so that way you're not making emotion-based decisions, which are more often than not going to be where the problems come from. All right? So I'm not anti-emotion. I joke around a lot. I have a lot of fun. Everybody laughs and all that kind of stuff. But I'm very much aware what I'm doing, when I'm doing it, and if I'm going to do it, so that I'm generating and experiencing emotions that are in control, okay? I mean, look, I'm a wise guy at times of the highest order, which means that I could just derail what should be a proper service and just go into wise guy mode, and then it's like Comedy Central. But I can't do that because this is Shabbat. But I can have those levity moments that add to the experience and get a message across if I allow the mind to control how much of the other stuff is happening. Okay? Because if you've ever been away from this and been with me other places, if I get on a roll, it could be a roll. All right? And it could just go on and on. But that would not be appropriate during a teaching message. So I'm conscious of the emotion, because I get caught up in the fun of all that too, and I could just keep going. But then I have to make a decision. It's a fly around again. All right? It's Billy's pet fly from the lobby, though. Actually, no, that can't be, because I killed that one the other day. Must be his cousin. Okay. All right, so... No, this one's Marlene's. That's the problem. Okay, from the front desk. Okay, so... we just had one that was really driving us crazy, and then I finally got it with my zapper. And Billy was like, praise ya! Praise ya! He was so happy. Because that fly had been annoying us for like a week. It was terrible. Anyway, did that help answer the question, Shannon? Okay. Yeah, all of us struggle with this. We have to win that battle between the rational, logical mind and the balance with the emotion. So it's a battle of balance. It's not a battle between the two, like have one or the other. It's a battle to maintain appropriate balance between the two. You know, you're not going to do any of this, really, unless you want it. So you have to have the emotion. You have to desire him to do what he wants the way he wants. So the emotion has to be there, but it's maintaining the balance of it that we need the mind for. Okay, Shira.
I am very thankful that through you, Father gave me a belt of truth, which I did not have before. And so I have some connections that maybe you'd like to comment on. The first thing that I thought of was the way the belt goes around the core of us. And Yeshua had said, if you believe in me, out of your belly will flow the rivers of living water. And so the belt or the girdle being around that place. Would you care to comment on that?
No, okay. just proving the wise guy point. All right. Actually, when you said that, what occurred to me more was a little lower down. In other words, the girdle being around your reproductive areas. And so you're going to produce basically from those areas. So you want to make sure that you're girding that area with truth. So you're producing things that are in truth. So you're giving birth to, you're bringing into existence things that are in line with and girded in truth. So actually, I would take that a little bit lower down. So I like the visual that you gave, but you know, when we picture what was given to Jeremiah, it was to gird his lower parts of his body, right? And that's where the reproductive stuff is, and we give birth out of that. We create life out of that, and that needs to be girded with truth. So as we're living life and bringing life and doing life, I think that maybe that's the imagery. And I only got that thought because of what you said going around the belly, so that was good.
That's great. Do you think that might be what Yeshua meant then? Out of your belly, out of your reproductive?
Yeah, I think voices. When he says out of your belly, that could be it also, right?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, the other connection I was having was in Proverbs 31, the woman makes girdles for the merchants, and I believe that is where they would put their treasure. And so that girdle being whole and not rotting is where we can store and put and keep the living treasure of the word that's become real to us and that we're living out.
Okay, that's a good image. Okay. I like that.
And then, oh, this is so much fun. And then I noticed here the first thing you in the armor is the belt of truth. And the last thing in the armor, unless, I mean, you certainly count praying, but the last actual physical element of the armor is the sword of the Spirit. So in a soldier's dress, wouldn't the sword of the, his sword would be hanging from a scabbard, which would be attached to the belt? Is that, does that work?
It does work.
Yeah, because, I mean, I love this. I mean, the sword is the word. The word is the truth. So you've got the truth all around, and then you've got the sword being intimately attached to what you're wearing around your middle that protects what you're producing. And so you have it ready at all times. You can whip that thing out and just
right.
Well,
slay
look, the dragon.
And it says the word is a double-edged sword, and
yes.
it, you know.
Yeah.
It also have the idea of it being the fullness of the intention. Okay, so you've got the truth, but then you've got another reminder of the deeper layer, the spirit of it, and it's still connected to being the word of Elohim, because that's what the verse says. It says, take also the helmet of deliverance and the sword of the spirit, which is the word of Elohim. And so that all ties together, and we'll still get to that. Maybe next week. Okay. So.
I like to do that to you. Guess
That's
what
okay.
you're going to teach next time.
We're playing Guess What's Coming Next Week. All right. Hey, Jessica.
Hi. So you were talking about putting on the armor and about needing other people to help us put it on. So for people that are super independent, yellow, red, what would that look like for someone helping me if I can't stand getting help, aside from counsel?
Okay. When we're talking about the armor, okay, Jessica, we're not talking about, like, everything. We're talking about the armor. So there are certain things in your life, not everything, so you don't need help with everything. So you realize, for example, like with counseling, that you actually need help. There may be parts of the armor that you need help with. That's why you have teachings. You have instruction that comes to give you some of that. So it doesn't mean that, I'm very independent. I like to get help. But what about those times when I need it and I'm not going to hesitate and be reluctant to realize that I should go ahead and get some? Okay? So does that help kind of work that through? Okay. Ashley.
I'm going to read what I wrote, but I'm hoping it makes sense because my mind's kind of going everywhere.
I hope so, too.
At least you speak, Ashley. How often do we put on the wrong armor and trusting the wrong person to help us put it on? We need not to be lazy and to guard our heart and his commands. Often I have realized I put on the fake armor or the wrong armor when it was too late. And then I just wanted to say, we need a teacher to put on the armor for us. And also thank you for putting on the armor.
Okay, that made sense. I don't think it needs any explanation. Okay. I think what you said made total sense. It was good.
Perfect. And then I wanted to tie that to, because you did this in another teaching, but I didn't write down what teaching it was, in Jeremiah 13:17. If we read further, all the time you tell us is to listen, and not just listen, but to receive. And I feel like if you listen and you receive, then you'll know how to put the armor on, and all you need is a few quick adjustments to make it perfect. So thank you.
Oh, good. Well said. Well said. I will just make one little addition, which is when you said about the teacher helping you put it on, I think more the teacher, one of the things about armor is that if you watch any of the movies, you usually will see that once it's put on, somebody checks to make sure it's on right, that there are no gaps in it, that it's attached correctly. So that's more where the teacher can come into place, or someone in the vertical that you can go to and say, can you kind of give me a quick inspection of my armor, make sure that it's on right and I've got it, you know, in place and it's going to protect me properly. There's no gaps to get you know, through and hurt or anything. And so that's, I think, more that role. Okay. All right. Mr. Shamish Waffle.
Just real quick, when you talked about having the same mind, the definition says identical, not different.
Right.
So that's pretty wild. And then the other thing is putting on a guard or waist with truth. That's like putting on the armor. But maybe you could cover more how the value comes out of how we use it, not how much we know about it. And then we should do it out of need, not out of convenience, because life isn't convenient. And things come up all the time that would keep us from maybe using it correctly.
Wait a minute. Life isn't convenient?
No. And then we often wonder why we're not getting out of what we expected, but we never look at we're not giving what we should give to get what we want. So maybe you could cover that, because there's no action, no benefit.
All right. Thank you. Well said. All right. Craig.
I think wealth, maybe to add on to a little point of wealth, would be one that is happy in their lot and can help others.
Yes, absolutely.
And then for the poor, is also a blessing in the fact that if we didn't have the poor amongst us, wealth would be of no value.
Correct.
That it's the how we handle wealth, and just a thought on fear and worry and a little bit of testimony. My wife is just an amazing being that is just without an ounce of worry. We moved here. She was 7 months pregnant, not having a house to move into. Just the things in our life and the areas where, she could have had, just been full of worry and just never any worry. And just full faith that everything will work out to his good and not necessarily to our good, I think, which is a lot where people struggle a lot. A lot of people want to do stuff to get something out of it, or especially the body in the church. I think that could be a goat-type mentality. That you want that good food and then trample it for those that come after you as well. So it's, to really check the intention of our heart. And I've heard others say that if I think that you're close to Elohim, how can I not be close to you if I'm close to Elohim? And, there's not going to be that big of a difference between us. If we're both truly doing what we need to do to be close to Elohim.
Amen. Thank you for sharing that. Look, and just to kind of, I know it was the beginning of what you said, Craig, but just to put a stamp on that rich versus wealth, okay? Riches is an objective number that people just select and say, if you have this much, you're rich. Wealth has no number. Wealth is a lifestyle. It's a mindset. It's a stress-free. There's no number to connect to wealth. Okay? They will always put out this idea of, you know, the rich, at this income, you're rich, or this kind of net worth, you're rich. So rich is a number. Wealth, because there are a lot of people that are not wealthy that are rich, because they have lifestyles that make them just as poor as people that are poor. They just do it at a much higher tax bracket, okay? Because they've taken that rich, those riches, and they spent it into all kinds of more debt and more problems, more stress. Because you have a lot of very rich people hurting themselves, killing themselves, ending up on the streets or whatever, because they just can't deal with the life that they're creating and the reasons they don't have a purpose for it. Because they never thought about wealth. They only thought about riches. And so that's where the biggest problem comes in, okay? So you can't have a dollar amount for wealth. You could be wealthy at any income level, as long as you're happy, comfortable, stress-free, and have your needs met, okay? So you could choose to be wealthy right now if you could find a way to be at peace with what you got. That makes sense? All right? Amen. Okay, and your name, Jennifer.
I knew you were going to do that.
I was paying attention earlier.
I knew you were going to do that.
I was going to call you something else, but, you know, I don't go with the crowd since the crowd's calling other things.
Shabbat shalom, Rabbi. I knew that was going to happen.
All available material must be used over and over again. So.
I put myself out there, so.
There you go.
Right. That's, yeah. So the armor of God, like, coming out of the Sunday church, that was a big one that was talked about a lot, you know, is the armor of God. And I feel like it was almost like in this, like, kind of fantasy way. I don't know how to explain it, but it's like, get up and you're going to do these things. But I guess, so I'm wondering, you know, if there's an area that we know is a vulnerable or weak area in ourselves that we notice, like, say, the same kind of pattern happens of maybe temptation or weakness in our flesh, what are good ways that we can prepare ourselves or gird our loins in that way, you know, with the truth that's more a practical way?
All of the places that we run into that there's a weak area, that's where we go for counsel, okay? Because then through counsel, we can figure out what's weak, why it's weak, and then maybe what should be done to strengthen it. Because it's not necessarily going to be a one-size-fits-all for the answers, okay? So you need to counsel, and through counsel, what you think is the problem may not be the problem. Maybe three or four layers down, we figure out what really is the problem. What you may be looking at is a symptom. And people come to me and say, well, I've got this problem. And I go, well, actually, no, that's a symptom. And then we dig down and realize, well, that's because of another symptom. And then finally, we find what the problem is at the bottom, okay? And so that's what you would do.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Elizabeth, or, all right. All right, Shamash Rob, live stream.
Okay, from Miss K, about being judged by the works, says, please help her understand. She gives a couple of verses, 2 Samuel 1:16, 2 Samuel 4:10. These two men did not do the killing, but was executed for confessing it. Or is this just about the intent only?
Give me the verses again.
2 Samuel 1:16 and 4:10.
Okay. All right, so in 1:16 it says, and David said to him, your blood is on your own head, for your own mouth has witnessed against you, saying, I myself have put to death the anointed of Yahweh. And then 4:10, is that what you said? Let's see. When someone reported to me saying, see, Shaul is dead, and he was a bearer of good news in his own eyes, I then took hold of him and slew him, etc. Okay. These are the responses of King David. This is not what we're talking about as far as Yahweh judging you by your works. Okay, King David is a king, so he's allowed to also judge, and so he did what he did. Whether he was right or wrong is going to be in the eyes of the actual judge. Okay, well, let's understand that that was not a judgment from above where Yahweh told David to do this. This is David applying what he understood at that time. Okay? Next.
From Yehim Stone, says in Philippians 2:6, Yeshua being in the form of Elohim, are we also considered in the form of Elohim after being resurrected?
1 John tells us that we do not know what he's like at this point, but that we know that when we see him, we'll be changed and we'll be like him. That's when we will be in the form of Elohim. So yes, that should be when we are resurrected, okay? So it's kind of like I've said about the example of the amoeba trying to understand a human being. Kind of a little tough. But if the amoeba all of a sudden was transformed into a human being, it would get it. But we are going to be transformed into the incorruptible. Then we'll understand really what it means to be Elohim. Okay, next.
I only just got one more, just came in, but and you can tell me if it's applicable or not. Claudette, right, if Abba is the one who put all the rulers of this world in place, is he the one who put those in charge of the present darkness, or is that too literal an interpretation?
Okay, let's go back to Emunah. He caused or allowed. So, in other words, he's allowed, at the very minimum, those to be in charge at this time because of what he would be able to see develop because of them being in those places. In other words, it served a purpose in the growing of the body. Look, a lot of the growth comes through negative experiences. America, more growth comes through negative experiences than almost than positive experiences. And so he's put you in this petri dish of lots of negative experiences to see what you're going to be able to grow into. And so, yes, Abba is the one who allowed or put. The key word is allowed, though. So we know at the very minimum he allowed them to be there. And it says that these are both, whether allowed or caused, they're because it serves his purpose. So he has come to the decision that allowing them at least serves a purpose in the bigger picture. Do we always understand that? No. Can we always see why he did it or why he chose to allow it? No, we don't always get to see all of that, at least not now. Maybe in the future we'll have that 20/20 hindsight and get to see it. Maybe he'll explain this all to us when we get resurrected and how that all plays out. Okay? Is there any other questions?
Rick Johnson had posted on here. He was asking, he says, unto death, even a stake, may we include with public shame and also a torturous death associated to the stake?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think there's a whole lot of good ways to die. That's certainly one of the worst ways to die. Okay, there are other torturing things, I guess, you know, but certainly you can include with the public shaming that this is a torturous death and et cetera, et cetera. But the reason it was brought to, and I guess we could add the torture to it, but I think the reason that we were reading it in the verses we were reading is that it said that he was obedient unto death, even a torturous shaming death. We can put those both together, we'll be fine. Because some of you are not willing to understand that part of the journey might be torturous. I've had people tell me, I'm not sure I can do this. I don't know if I can make it. I don't know, because you're suffering for right now. And you're not able to count that nothing when looking at the future of what you're supposed to be receiving if you could get through. Go through the teaching, endure, and receive the crown of life. I think I talk a little bit about that. Actually, I know I talk a lot about that, not necessarily that verse specifically, but the idea that this whole journey is a journey of endurance. Because he needs to know, if I'm going to give you forever, what if some adverse things start going on? Are you just going to change, quit, give up, run your own way? Or are you going to hang in there no matter what's going on? Okay, that's important. And by the way, for those in the first resurrection, I don't know whatever Christianity's ever taught you, but this is not like you die, you go up to heaven, you're strumming a harp, or I don't even know what Christianity says is going to happen when you're resurrected, because apparently, according to them, you die, you go right to heaven, so what's the point of a resurrection? Going to rip you out of heaven, stick you in a body? I don't understand. That made no sense to me whatsoever. Okay? If everybody's already in hell or in heaven, who's going into a body? And what would be the point of that? But the thing is that whatever is going on there, realize that in the millennium, after the first resurrection, in the millennium, at the end, before the 1,000 years is complete, Hasatan is released and there's a war and it's a mess, and Abba has to know you won't mess up with that. Now, a lot of the people that are alive do mess up, but not those that he's given an incorruptible body. Because some of you are thinking, oh, well, once I get that, then there'll never be a challenge ever again in the universe. No. Doesn't say that anywhere. Okay? It's not until all of that's done in Revelation 21. But until we get to Revelation 21, we still have a problem. And we're told about what that might look like at the end of the millennium with the Gog and Magog war and all those people that go in that direction when Hasatan is released. And that answers the question, or begs the question, well, why would he release him? It doesn't say he escaped. And you're thinking, you're the creator of everything. You're the smartest being in the universe. You have him chained up. Why would you let him go? Because everybody has to be tested. That's the purpose of Hasatan, is to test us. So that before he gives you an immortal suit, he knows that you're trustworthy. So he has to release him because he's the best testing tool he has. All right? He exists and is allowed to exist to serve the Creator's purposes. And when it serves him not to have him be around, he locks him up and sticks him in a pit. Okay? So he can do that anytime he wants. But he doesn't do that all the time because he serves a purpose. And that is to see what you're made out of. Okay? And so that's an important thing that we understand. All right, well, thank you all for participating today.